Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize they're on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, which is hosted by Late Night Poets After Midnight on Blog Talk Radio. We are a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's way more fun if you are, because you can chat with us in the chat, you can read the poems as we do, and you can make those comments on those poems. I am your host, Afasiana, and with me I have the lovely Pam Ray. Hi, Pam.
Hey, baby, how's it going?
I am absolutely exhausted because I had a busy day at work, but it was like the best kind of busy. First, I did Pokemon crafts, like little fairy gardens for Pokemon with the kids. So I had about, I think, 20 little kids who were making a craft with me, and then like immediately after that one was done, so I didn't even really have time to clean up, I had some teenagers come and we did cookies and canvas. So basically they could paint whatever they wanted, but we had these like mini canvases and a whole bunch of paint supplies and crayons and things. And they could make whatever they wanted, but they also, because I had my table of stuff from the kids earlier, they were like, hey, can we use this stuff too? So we did, and we made like these multimedia kind of art things, which was really fun. And they were so excited I actually had cookies for Cookies and Canvas. I'm like, duh, I was put it right in the title. and then right after that, we had karaoke for teens, which I only had two people for that one. But I sang along, so it was fun.
I always find karaoke fun. You know, but not everybody does. It sounds like, oh, my goodness, it sounds like a great day. You know,
it was. It was.
Yeah.
I made everything back to back, so I had no break whatsoever. But it was a fun thing to have no break from. How was your day?
You know, all in all, pretty good. Basically, same old, same old. I'm hiding indoors from the sun. You know, and yeah. So. I might potentially be getting an apartment of my own in town, and the closest thing to it within walking distance will be the town library. So I am looking forward to that. If it works out, fingers crossed, knock on wood, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that you get it. It'll be exciting to have your own place. Plus, I'm a little biased, but libraries are awesome. So, you know, nice location.
Exactly. But, yeah, I can't promise I'll have the greatest comments tonight, mainly because I didn't get a chance to read the poetry ahead of time. So it'll be some off-the-cuff commenting. So if at any point people are thinking, where the hell is Pam going with this? Well, just know that Pam doesn't know either. So...
I have to say, I usually go off the cuff.
Oh, well, there you go. So, that works.
You can expect the same from me. I like being surprised by things. You can hear that I'm genuinely surprised, but sometimes confused as well. So we'll see. No, that's fun. Thank you so much for joining us. Pam came last minute because I was like, please, please, please. And Pam is
awesome. Oh, absolutely. Well, that's what we're for, you know. I mean, we're like basically each other's backup, you know. So I can be like on a Thursday night, hey, Faisy, are you around? And you can be like, hey, Pam, are you around? And, you know, that's what we're
it
there
works
for.
Out nicely.
It does. I know a lot of people. Like, I know Robbie said in the room right now, Pam, my comments are always off the cuff, and I know we have other people like Kate likes to comment off the cuff, so does Rex. I'm not one of those people. If I have an opportunity to read ahead of time, if I have the time in my day, I will do that because I am just – I'm also the type of person, though, that you don't want to give a surprise party to because I will probably be angry at you for at least 6 months to a year.
Yeah, because you need that time to adjust, right?
Exactly. So don't surprise me without warning. That's what I like to
say. All right. I am prepared now.
There you go. And so what? Tell me about your prompts for tonight.
Okay, so it was a piece of art that I saw. It's a little cartoon. It's more of like a thinker cartoon than art per se. And it's by a person called Worry Lines. So their Twitter and their Facebook and everything is @worry_lines. And I just enjoy their stuff, so I follow them on Facebook and I saw this. And it's a little dude, he's just a kind of generic person, and in his head, you can, like, there's like a blackout, so you can see in his head, his kind of like thoughts, what he's picturing. It says in frame one, I'm always getting, and then there's like the little, guy kind of like just sitting there in his head. And second panel is stuck in my head. And so the little guy inside the head is like kind of like making a little pillow kind of bed area. And the third one, it says, so I'm trying to make it. And then the little guy has a book and a light, and he's just making himself cozy in there. And it says, a nice place to be. So I'm always getting stuck in my head, so I'm trying to make it a nice place to be. And it's actually, when I first saw this, it was in this group called Tell Me You're Neurodivergent Without Saying You're Neurodivergent. And it's kind of a whole bunch of different kinds of neurodivergent people who think differently and usually have some kind of disability or considered mental illness that we think differently. And so, you know, I tend to spiral out and be stuck in my head. But if you make your head a nice place to be, then it's not so awful to be stuck in there having your negative thoughts. So it's just a cute little kind of uplifting thing about making your headspace better. And that was my prompt.
I like that. I like that. And you know what it kind of reminds me of? It reminds me of the saying, and I might be slightly paraphrasing, but basically the idea that oftentimes the way we talk to ourselves, we would be appalled if we talked to our best friends, our mothers, our fathers, you know, like even a stranger on the street. You know, the way we talk to ourselves and put ourselves down, you know, we would never think to talk to somebody else like that unprovoked. And it kind of makes me think of that whole concept of, you know, you have to make your headspace a good place to be because you spend a lot of time there. So very cool. It'll be interesting to see what that inspires.
You know, I think what you just said is so true. You know, you got to consider if you would be that mean to someone else, like you're being mean to yourself. I was emailing one of my best friends who is kind of a long distance friend now, even though we went to school together, and I was talking about like how guilty I felt that I was not able to help this guy who was struggling at my work, and then he passed away. And I was like, I did this wrong, and I did this wrong, and I should have done this and this. And she was like, do you think that about your coworkers? Do you think, like, oh, I can't believe she didn't do that, and why wasn't she there to do that? And I was like, no. And she was like, then you can't expect yourself to be able to do the things either. And I was like, yeah, I guess you're right. So it's, you know, we have to give ourselves the same freedom that we would someone else. So, well said, Pam.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm going to read the first story, poem, and it's by Xanthos Basilius. This is called Interior Design. Again, with the tile store, the luxury tile store, with its shelves of porcelain and ceramic, quarry stone, glass, and metal, arrayed in florals, mosaics, patterns, geometric, lozenges, pickets, and hexes, a gorgeous demonstration of the curse of choice. The floor models, in perfect condition, made the decision ever more painstaking, deliberative like a jury trying to decide a capital case. As if there were nothing that could surpass its importance. I excused myself to the washroom, hoping to avoid what judgment awaited me outside its chambers, because every one of them was beautiful and terrible, because each destroyed all the others, hoping a little goddess of chaos might drop an apple on me, an excuse for war. But I returned, empty-handed, to find you conferring with one of the models, trying out different boundaries for your selection. She asked me which option I thought was the most expensive. I picked the wrong one at random, not even bothering to consider the possibility they were all the same. End poem.
Great read there, Faisy. I really like his name or their name, Xanthos Basilius. That's cool. Sounds very Greek-like or, you know, mythological. Yeah, I like the imagery and metaphors in this. And the idea of how overwhelming making choices can be. There's part of it that makes me think the idea that, you know, like what it's like to have a panic attack when trying to make choices over simple things. And I remember like when my daughter was my oldest was a younger teenager, and the her anxiety really started to show. There was like one time we were at the store, and I asked her what she wanted to drink, and she finally managed to come up with that she wanted iced tea. And we're standing in front of the iced teas, and of course, as you probably know, you go to choose an iced tea, and they have like 10 to 20 different kinds. And I just remember her like shutting down. And then it's easy to think, well, you know, there's only slight differences. You know, it's an easy choice to make. What kind of iced tea do you want? But, you know, for somebody, you know, in the middle of a panic attack or an anxiety attack, there really isn't in the moment an easy choice. There's also this idea, I think, of feeling put on the spot by either other people or by your own mind, and giving the prompt. I would say a lot of it has to do with feeling put on the spot with your own mind. I really liked this all the way through, but especially where it says quarry stone, glass, and metal arrayed in floral mosaic patterns, geometric lozenges, pickets, and hexes, a gorgeous demonstration of the curse of choice. And then where it goes down to, and it becomes so gritty and realistic, and I excused myself to the washroom, hoping to avoid what judgment awaited me outside its chambers, because every one of them was beautiful and terrible. That idea of needing in the moment that personal space. The place that always gives me anxiety attacks when I'm confronted with having to make a choice, but I don't even know if you have them there, is Subway, where you have to choose what bread and then what cheese and what meat and what vegetables. And they always seem in such a freaking hurry that I feel myself just going into panic mode and wanting to run home. So I very rarely eat at Subway, but anyway, slight digression there, but I thought this was an amazing write, and I'll definitely have to check out more of this poet.
I think that's a natural thing for that to be a place where you feel anxiety, because you do have to make lots of choices. I actually saw the cutest thing one day where there were some teens, like really young teens, like probably like 13, and one of them, you could tell, was having that anxiety and was like, I don't even know what to order. There's so many choices. And then the other one's like, so I'll go first and you can watch, because first they'll ask you what kind of bread, and then they'll ask you what this is, and then they'll ask what that is. And she's like, if I go first, then you can hear the options and you have time to think about it before they ask you. And so they did, and it was just like so sweet the way that the one was helping
that's
the other.
Aww. That is
I loved
sweet.
It. And I really liked your whole comment. I agree about how that anxiety can make every choice worse, and that, you know, kind of running away to the washroom to think, I totally do that. I also get sensory overload really easily, so if I'm feeling like everything's too loud or there are too many people or whatever, I just go hide in the bathroom for a minute just to, you know, get my head straight and try to think things through when there's not distractions. It's also really hard to choose something if there's like people talking, or like I get really thrown off by what's happening around me when I'm trying to think of an answer. Can't hear myself think. So, you know, I thought it was very relatable that he stepped away for a minute. And I really liked hoping a little goddess of chaos might drop an apple on me. Excuse for war. Like, you just, like, give me an idea. Give drop something, create some kind of conflict, the excuse for war, so I don't have to, you know, force myself to make a choice that I'm not ready to make. I thought that was really cute. Where is it here? Like a jury trying to decide a capital case. Like, it makes it into, like, a really big deal. I also liked when it said that things were all wonderful and terrible, because how could they destroy the other options? It's just that making it feel dramatic, and it can feel dramatic no matter what it is. And I also think, like, interior design, the title, goes two ways. So on the one hand, he's talking about interior design as in, like, how you design your house. But also, I think, because of the prompt, interior design is like your own internal design. How do you want to make things work for yourself? Even when you're trying to imagine how you would arrange things within your brain, how that would go. This whole prompt makes me think about, like, when I first had my brain damage, it was like everything was mixed up. So it was like I had, like, a little library in my head before where all of my information was stored, very organized on the shelf, and then, bam, it was like an earthquake, and everything was on the floor, completely out of order. Still all the knowledge in there, but could I figure it out and find it? Took me time every time to find what little tidbit I was looking for. And so here he is trying to design things, and he's looking at the floor models, and they're in such good shape, and you have to consider, like, what will they be like if they get damaged? How easily are they damaged? Because the different materials, the stone or the glass or the metal, those are going to wear differently. So I think pointing out that they're all, you know, in really good shape to start with is important, because you have to think about how it will change. And later on, he's talking about trying out different boundaries for your selection. How will it apply? And then he says that he chose the wrong one. But did he? I mean, how do you know? So, I don't know. I thought this was really nice in its detail, and it seemed almost like a stream of consciousness, which works really well in terms of what the prompt is.
Oh, absolutely. Great observations there.
Our next one has an audio. So I'm going to do that from Weaver. Here we go.
I know I have something I'm meant to do. There's a sharp, nagging pain in my head. I'm also aware that I've been avoiding it because it appears to fill me with dread. Here's my ego trying to be understanding, although I know that she's incandescent. It seems I've been rather careless this time, renting out a space I thought was vacant. Ego tried to reason with my tenant. No joy. He didn't care that this was Ibs to move into. Time to bring in superego to explain that though it looked comfy, this place was never meant for two.
Excellent audio. Thank you, Weaver of Dreams. Who often gives us an audio version, which is so great, because even if the time zone doesn't work out for her, we get to hear it in her own voice, and it's wonderful to hear things in the poet's own voice. Gives us a sense of how it should sound. Also, once I've heard someone's voice, whenever I read their work, I hear it in their voice in my mind. So I really want to hear everyone at least once so I can get that mental, I was going to say image. It's not quite image. The mental sound going on when I read what they're doing. I really enjoy that. So here we are in her poem, and there is that, I like that it says a sharp nagging pain, because there is kind of that tug when you, there's something that you can't remember and it pulls at you. I've never quite thought of it as sharp. That's like a really intense kind of nagging that you've forgotten something. And then to have that feeling of dread make you realize that you were avoiding it and that's why you've forgotten it, that's very self-aware. But now that she says that, I totally relate to that. There's that kind of dread feeling that you can – it's weird how physical some emotions feel. Like, when I think of dread, I think of this really tight feeling in my back and kind of a sick step, like, feeling that goes, like, from my stomach up my throat. And it's odd that an emotion has a distinct feeling, but it does. And then to think of your ego as a separate person from yourself. I know she's incandescent. It's like it's totally separating different parts of her and having them kind of compete against each other in a way. Ego tried to reason with my tenant. No joy. He didn't care that this was the id's move into. So it's like there's your mind, and then there's your other part of your mind, and they're having that little fight, and I really like that. And then you bring in the superego. I thought she brought in some good psychology into this and made us think. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I do really like that she brought in the psychology of the id, the ego, and the superego, and the idea of, I like how this speaks on the idea of how our own individual sense of self takes up too much space in our head, and but also I think how other people can, you know, other people's voices nagging at us can take up too much space in our head. I like the irony of the title Comfy, because, you know, it fits well with the prompt. But you really don't get a comfy feel from this poem, you know, with between the sharp nagging pain, as you said, which was, you know, nice because it's unique, it's different, you know. It really shows how intense the feeling is. And yeah, when you're right, when there are different emotional feelings that have, you know, physical reactions. Me, when I feel like I've forgotten something, what I feel like is not as pain, but I always feel like, it sounds odd, but like if I go to leave my house or something and I know I've forgotten something, but I don't know what, I have this like feeling of kind of like almost nausea or dizziness that won't go away until I remember what it was, or I have to just finally, sometimes if I can't remember, the only way to calm myself down is just to say, to keep telling myself, it's okay to forget it. You know, it's okay. You know, you can always turn back around. And, you know, as long as I've done things like, okay, like if I'm going on a day trip or something, I'm like, do you have your medicine, Pam? Check, you know, I go through the list. But I like the way that Kate has written this, and it's always a wonderful read by her. I like the personification of the id, the ego, and the superego. Here's my ego trying to be understanding, although I know that she's incandescent. It seems I've been rather careless this time, renting out a space I thought was vacant. That idea that you think you're alone in your head, that there's nothing negative that's going to come along, and then all of a sudden it bombards you. I really feel like there's some kind of great dark humor within these lines. Wonderful, right, and very well done.
That was a fantastic comment. Thank you, Pam. And it also made me notice that the title changed, because you pointed out that the title was Comfy, and originally, the title was Rental Space.
Oh, look at that. You're right. And I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. So she changed
it. By the time I noticed.
Well, and that's totally cool. It's just I noticed, because in the studio, I had her audio listed differently. Or no, I didn't. How did I know? I don't know. Somehow I knew it was different. I guess because of the address within it. But yeah, it was really neat how she made that, because rental space and comfy are quite different. And it shows her change of perspective about her own work. Cool. I've posted one by Matt29. Would you please read that for me, Pam?
I would be happy to. All right. Random Thoughts by Matt29. Thinking is sometimes too much. I need to concentrate on being. Now, what was I doing? That's right, writing this poem. Considering my options, making some headway. Now stopping to regroup, pondering where next. Out the door, into the sunshine, in my pajamas, surely not. Now I'm dressed, clouds appear, better redress, ready for rain. What shall I eat? I'm hungry. Open the fridge and see what's there. Remnants of dinner looking old. Nothing inspiring leaves me cold. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you. Thinking is sometimes too much. I like the second line the best. I need to concentrate on being. You know, sometimes it's not about what you're doing or what, like, other thoughts. Sometimes you just need to be to like, allow yourself to just kind of, like, be a person and just feel what you're feeling and just, I don't know, concentrate on being. I really like that. That's just amazing. I know I'm the library obsessed weirdo, but for us, a big part of my role of the library's role is a place where people can just be. If you're in a store, you're expected to buy things. If you're at a gym, you're expected to work out. And like, yes, we are there for reading and for various activities, but you can just be, and there's not many places you can do that. So it's rare that someone points that out, and I need to concentrate on being. It's just a wonderful line. And then there's those kind of indecisive moments, out the door, into sunshine, in my pajamas? Surely not. That's totally something I would do, just like forget to get dressed. and then you have to like reevaluate based on what's happening in the world. It's raining, you have to do that. What food is there? And you just, those little everyday things are, you know, challenges that we all have to face, and they distract us from our deeper thoughts sometimes. And what did you think?
I enjoyed this all the way through. It was nicely written, great fun humor, especially, you know, where he says, now, what was I doing? That's right, writing this poem. it's definitely relatable. I, too, really like the line, I need to concentrate on being, because that's so true. Sometimes we really just need to focus on living in the moment. And that's what this does speak to me about, is the idea of you need to focus on being, you need to focus on living in the moment. But there is so much traction throughout life, and even things that you think will go easily, you know, like, you know, getting dressed, or, you know, the end where he says, what shall I eat? I'm hungry. Open the fridge and see what's there. Remnants of dinner looking old. Nothing inspiring leaves me cold. Another great, clever lines with some great humor to me, because, you know, leaves me cold can be kind of seen as a philosophical look at how life, you know, is mundane and leaves you cold, but also obviously the refrigerator, standing there with the refrigerator open and finding nothing. And, you know, I like that. I like his wordplay in this. I like how he brings us into the moment of, you know, we're supposed to be focusing on writing a poem, but there's so many other distractions in life, you know, and wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Now I'm going to read one by Ben Hart, who I see is listening and on the board. Hi, Ben. And here we go. This is called My Mind is a Storyteller. Life, Make It Up As We Go by Ben Hart. 1. Gone. The way there is a promise of change that by definition cannot keep itself, and it feels longer than the way back because the world behind is smaller than the unknown ahead. 2. Away. Come as you are, not as you're wanted, and never be expected to be expected. We don't have to go if you do not want to. We can just go where no one knows us. But a God we couldn't love because of what he stole from us and the hopelessness he replaced it with, it's all we have to escape in. Where every scattered cleft hides the catacombs where we left our old selves for dead. But the joke is on us, because now they're crawling into our lungs. Monks that honor nothing but the toll of living on the soul. And we thought it would give us purpose, but now we only love nothing at all, besides what we had before. 3. Where I cannot follow. And so, upon a windswept crescendo, a choir of crows lamenting, even the cold itself crying out for the return of the black herd, a distant thunder dull of hoof and heart, draws every mortal eye into the periphery. And their old friend awaits them, saying they've betrayed him and that they will not take her. And he makes his stand against the fallen brothers now opposed, fabled riders of the black herd, circling their survivor, holding close behind them his child. And just when the maelstrom of shadow and sorrow quiet down, the sky bruises and every eye bows to the ground. For they know the pale lone rider and fear he is there for them. And there is no thunder, just the winds not knowing where to go. Clouds carousel the canvas upon which life flashes before the eyes of the unbent, as a final warning to look away, a flash of light, star falling up. And so enters death, and the lone rider parts the herd and greets her champion at the center. You gave me your word, my love. I would get her until she'd lived a full life. And death smiled and kissed him. You see her as a child through the eyes of a father. She has lived and loved. Now her horse awaits, and it has already found its way from my world to take her away. And he smiled back at her. It would never have been enough, my time with either of you. And death bowed, and before she left again, she said, careful who you love. It's the only promise I remember. 4. Where God makes plans and man weeps. Why did he make us saviors if we cannot be saved? If life is a parade of decay to rub in atrophy's triumph over everything even God stood to create, where is the love in it? To lose ones I love, and I know I am a hypocrite, but there are depths of my heart, but I refuse to see them as my scars, because this love I may have numbed, but never let die, and it hurts because I miss it so much, the ignorance of illness, but I suppose we were already hurting then, but we're going through it alone, and it's okay. Let atrophy's gorge itself upon blind upon me. I'm ready. I'm already found. Call home when you will, Father. But I will burn heaven down. For that is why you made me, your way out of immortality. But then you may have failed, as you had me fail, because you taught me for every aching there is love. Another life you will live. You taught me love. But I taught myself to forgive. You taught me love, but gave me way too much of it. Hands made to give, but unable to heal. And for years, it ran me out of feeling. Let me go, Lord. Just let me become snow in Saturn's rings. I see them. But now, I want to hear them sing. The stars in lonely dark gathering. 5. How much of this life is you and me? Hello, my love. I am here. Where are you? Because looking out over the valleys of death, all I see is depth and not my beloved ocean blue. Hello, my love. I'm here. Where are you? Because looking back over the hills that hid the past, now I see what we could have had, which was nothing akin to what we lacked. We felt we lacked. Hello, my love. We are here. The hunger of God, the still of the wind, wrapping around the skin, made to decay every day, but never withering. Hello, love. We are here. Stones that know the stories of old. We used to be the living, but we had to go, become the home. 6. And how much of this life is just sleep? Dreams. Therein lies the proof of immortality. How else do I divine these realms, if not like the fisherman, patient beside the pools of memory? Why else would it be that death awakens us, returns us to reality? And they'll say it because of our brains, not knowing what comes next, yet our eyes have opened every time again. I do not fear fighting through the tide, instead of drifting with it, to find that door in the back of my mind, through which one day I'll escape, and you're welcome to come with me into mysticism. 7. Where does it end? And I come home, when the day is long and the night mournful of what has yet to go, like when wadden ties go low and the land extends to bring into the fold every nowhere. And I come home, where gravity is easier to bear, where you could find our history in cairns or our every stair. And I come home, each day in dreams, because I was always welcome there, the first one to end in the race no one wanted to win. And how beautiful it seems, looking back. It's even better up ahead. 8. If not where it began. Gone away, where I cannot follow, where God makes plans and man weeps. How much of this life is you and me? And how much of this life is just sleep? Where does it end? If not, where it began, in the back of my mind, making it up as we went. End poem.
Oh, wow. Great read there, Faizy. That was absolutely beautiful. I could especially tell that you were getting into the right emotionally. This is, again, a powerful vignette by Ben. Beautiful and brilliant imagery and metaphors. I like how a couple of the main thoughts that I get from this is, first of all, what it's like to be lost in your own head, especially when your own head is a noisy place to be. And I also like how it seems to focus to me on the idea of being so consumed by simultaneously by the past, the present, and the future. You know, looking back and worrying about what once was, trying to live in the moment, but also being so focused on what is the future going to be like? What do I have to worry about? I like how he put this one part in capitals with, hello, love, we are here, stones that know the stories of old. We used to be the living, but we had to go become the home. So it looks as if these ancient stones are shouting into the mind. I also really like how Ben is so creative with his imagery and metaphors. Let me go, Lord, just let me become snow in Saturn's rings. I see them, but now I want to hear them sing the stars in lonely, dark gathering. That wanting to be let go both physically and emotionally, that idea of wanting life to end, to perhaps see what's after, but also the idea of wanting your own mind to be free to really appreciate the beauty of life. I also really like, I do not fear fighting it through the tide instead of drifting with it to find the door in the back of my mind. You know, sometimes we have to have that fight. We have to find that struggle. We have to have that fight, that struggle to find what is truly important, to find that thought, those thoughts that are the ones that we're supposed to be focused on. So amazing, right, all the way through, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. It's a good thing Ben is such an amazing writer, because he writes really long pieces, and, you know, that has potential to lose my interest when it's so long, but it never does. I was captured the entire time. So it shows how great it is that the length does not deter me at all from my interest in this. There were so many fantastic lines. I really liked, but the joke is on us, because now they're crawling into our lungs. And I also really enjoyed even the cold itself crying out. And just when the maelstrom of shadow and sorrow quiet down, the sky bruises and every eye bows to the ground. Like, that is absolutely beautiful. That whole section there is just gorgeously phrased. I adore it. Cloud carousels the canvas upon which flashes before the eyes of the unbent. Like, beautiful line right there. I mean, the whole poem is very, like, thought-provoking and interesting, but the individual, like, lines are worded so wonderfully that it's, like, hard not to get lost just in the phrasing. I also like that certain words are capitalized in places that make you really pay attention to them, like atrophy and there was another one, where it really personifies those feelings. And when it's talking about the horses all the time, I was thinking about, like, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Of course, it also made me think of the Nazgul in Tolkien's work, and the whole personification of death really reminded me of in Neil Gaiman's work, The Sandman, how death was alive, and actually, like, one of the more compassionate characters. So this just brought up that feeling of death personified, but not the typical Grim Reaper. It had kind of a different feel to it. The perspective throughout the whole thing is really interesting. I also loved the part about Saturn's rings that you pointed out, Pam. Just let me become snow in Saturn's rings. Like, it's not just send me out to space. It's not just the idea of being snow on Earth, but to combine those two to be the ice of Saturn's rings is just fantastic. Also, there was a part where a star was falling up. I've lost that part, but somewhere in here there was something where instead of falling down, it was going upwards, which is a really interesting kind of mental image to have as well. There's so much to comment on. I've kind of, like, lost it. I always highlight things as I go, and then I lose my highlighting, because you can only highlight so much. So just fantastic poem in general, beautiful wording, really interesting thoughts.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right, it is easy to get lost in Ben's writing. you know, because of his unique phrasing and his use of the imagery and metaphors throughout and how profound he gets, that it's almost hypnotic.
It is, for sure. Yeah. And we have to go somewhat fast on the show, you know, like if I'm reading it out loud, then I have to continue reading. Whereas if I'm reading it to myself, I'll stop and just kind of ponder a stanza or a line. But, you know, I can't make everyone wait as I think about a line. So that's why you're smart to pre-read, which I rarely do, and just gives you time to process, because I'm still processing this one, and I just think it's fantastic. Luke Jr. says to Ben, "You speak on a level that I have not quite reached, for I do not fully have the ability to write such a comment that this incredibly well-written write rightfully deserves." And I often feel that way. It's like, who am I to comment on these gorgeous poems? Because, like, I can't even form my thought in response to it in a way that is worthy of the poem. So I feel where you're coming from on that, Luke. I have posted one now by Sophia Axe. Pam, if you are able, that would be wonderful for you to read that one.
Oh, I would be happy to. All right. Let's see here. Refurnishing by Sophia Axe. And it goes like this. Memory, I'm always getting stuck inside my head. I lay undisturbed near my bed. Inside my head is a little person. It feels the same way I do, whether it sleeps in darkness. I'm sure my ideas bring it light. Maybe that's why I can't sleep at night. While I try to get some rest, this little person inside my head, they do what they do best, placing some flow towards my chest where my heart can do what it does best, keeping us both alive through the rest. They placed a chair or two. I'd imagine that's for the therapy to pursue. We talk back and forth from morning to night. That's when I hit the switch to turn off the light. My eyes finally closed. I'm able to start my slow descent into dreamland. All of a sudden, the tiny light inside awoken me. The tiny person is back with some more food for thought. I'm struggling to sleep because the mood has become much darker in tone. My little person tells me to pick up the phone. A voice on the other side tells me I'm crazy. I scratched my inner thigh and spoken, "No, I'm just lazy." Tiny person. The light bulb went out much later into the night. I lay awake with cracks in my eyes. The little sleep I was able to achieve didn't do much while my tiny person cries, "Please don't leave." End poem.
Great read, Pam. This is a really interesting piece, Sophia Axe. I like the way that there's that conversation with the tiny person and how the tiny person is keeping you awake at night because they won't be quiet and they want to talk the most during those times. Excuse me. Pardon me. So the idea of, you know, you must bring it light, and that's why they need you during the night, why you can't sleep, is because that little guy inside you needs you to keep it company. And I think this is something that a lot of people can relate to, having kind of those inner voices when they're trying to fall asleep that the brain doesn't want to shut up. There's that's when it gets real chatty and has some back with some more food for thought, has struggling to sleep. And that's when you get all of those things to contemplate. You can get quite philosophical, or you can also get into a darker kind of thought, like, you know, get into the negative zone, and says that because the mood has become much darker in tone. And that's like, it's quite common for at night. So I think this is a really nice way of explaining that with the little guy in the head. One part I found really interesting was, I lay undisturbed near my bed, not on her bed, not in her bed, but near the bed, laying not on the bed, but close to it. That was really interesting to me. What did you think, Pam?
That is interesting, and it makes me wonder about, we were talking about people who are neurodivergent. It makes me wonder if she's neurodivergent, or maybe she's trying to write from the perspective of someone who has. And I only say that because my son, Jaron, who is obviously, I always mention, has autism, he oftentimes will purposely choose to sleep, like, laying underneath his bed or next to his bed or hanging upside down from his bed. You know, it's almost like he's just trying to explore different sensory options when it comes to getting rest, and I do notice that this seems to speak a lot on the idea of a person who struggles to sleep. As she says in her lines, I'm struggling to sleep because the mood has become much darker in tone. Those are wonderful lines, and those are the kind of thoughts that keep you up. There will be times where I will be like, I am so freaking exhausted. As soon as this After Midnight show, I'm going straight to sleep. And then that's when, and I know this happens to a lot of people, those thoughts just hit you. Like everything you didn't think about during the day, or you know, those like just overwhelming, sometimes dark thoughts. I like the description of, you know, the voice inside your head being that little person. It kind of makes me think of the whole, like, angel and demon, devil on the shoulder type thing, only instead of two separate ones, it's just one person being that voice inside your head. And I do like how this speaks on the idea of how overwhelming the mind can be, especially when you're struggling to sleep and you want to rest, but you just can't because there's so much to be thought about. I really like this all the way through, but especially placing some flow towards my chest where my heart can do what it does best, keeping us both alive through the rest. They place a chair to, I'd imagine that's for the therapy to pursue. You know, the part where it says, keeping us both alive through the rest, they placed a chair to. It makes me think of that one prompt you had with the guy who was singing. What is it called? Hey, Ren. It makes me think of that and the idea of someone who has that inner conflict, that inner argument with themselves. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I've become a little bit obsessed with that guy, Ren. I absolutely love his poetry / music. And you're right, that Hey, Ren, where he's sitting there on the chair and kind of like changes back and forth between his different sides. Just amazing. Good connection there. Our next poem is by Princess Alicia. This is called My Mind Friend. The mind pillow needs fluffing. The blanket needs defluffing. How many times do I have to tell you? It's boring up in here. When I try to read, it's lights out. When I try to learn, you shut me down. What is my purpose? Your idea of making it better, it makes no sense to me. A window would be nice, or maybe even a tree. It's just so lonesome up here. You get to see a beautiful world. I just see darkness all day long. You tell me to be strong. It's not very fair. I do all the work when you aren't even there. End poem.
Great read there, Faizy. I like this. It's quite clever. And I know she takes it from the artwork, but I like when somebody takes something from the artwork and uses it in the poem in such a creative way. The mind pillow needs fluffing. I like that. And the blanket needs defluffing because, you know, it does make you think about the idea of how oftentimes when we go to sleep, our pillows need to be just right. Our blankets need to be just right. You know, and we want to shut down our thoughts, but it's not always easy. Again, another one that has a great kind of almost argumentative tone with that voice inside your head. You know, when I try to learn, you shut me down. What is my purpose? Your idea of making it better, it makes no sense to me. A window would be nice, or maybe even a tree. That really feels like the idea that, the idea of becoming so overwhelmed by thoughts and wanting to learn, but also being someone who shuts down easily. You know, just really clever, right, all the way through. And the idea of wanting to see more, wanting to learn more. Great write and very well done.
I agree. I like the idea of the mind, like, kind of feeling abandoned. You know, I'm up here. I don't get to see the things. I don't. I do all the work that little person in your head that has to do everything. And I kind of think of it as like talking to your subconscious, and that subconscious gets stuck doing so much and is feeling lonely and needs to be nourished and taken care of. Just have some kind of connection. That helps that little person in your mind cooperate with you more. And I also really liked the AN. I thought about how the mind speaks to me. It's kind of weird, but, you know, it is what it is. and it is sometimes like that, you know. Everyone has a different voice in their head that is their way of thinking. I'm not saying like a whole other person in your head, but it's just like the way that we process things. Although it was interesting, I was talking to my husband about it, and he's a very visual person. So when he thinks, he pictures stuff. He doesn't have like that voice. I basically have like a narrator as if I'm a novel, and it's just like talks about everything that's happening. And I just thought that's how everyone was, that I think in words describing everything. And he was like, no. I just assumed that's how people were. But not everyone has that internal dialogue. So I thought that this was an interesting example of having an internal dialogue.
It is. Yeah. And I'm also one of those people who has those like internal dialogues for about pretty much everything.
Well, I'm glad I'm not alone in that. One of my best friends was trying to explain that she was making decisions. She's like, my brain said this, but my other brain said this. I was like, oh, you have two brains now? And she's like, doesn't everyone?
Right? Oh, I like that. That's a great way to put it.
My other brain feels this way. So I think it's your turn to read, Pan, and we have one by Blue Leader 1.
Actually, is it my turn? Oh, gosh. You know, I'm just going to go with what you said because, yeah, I think you're right. Okay, now that I think about it. Yes, because I read Sophie. All right. So this is Homicidal Psycho Jungle Cat. Ooh, I like that title, by Blue Leader 1. In my head, there is always a storm brewing. usually I can keep it just outside the breakers in my horizon. There's always a storm waiting to pounce, like a big, furry, fluffy orange tiger, a homicidal, psycho jungle cat. Thing is, it's always my best friend. That storm keeps me on my toes. It keeps me entertained through the lonely hours of time. I don't think I'll ever be comfortable. Maybe, that's the way I was made to be. End poem.
Great read, Pam. This was really interesting. I like the title, Homicidal Psycho Jungle Cat. The storm always brewing is definitely a way of putting that kind of like the mixed feelings and the possible anxiety or maybe agitation that could happen. But the way it keeps you on your toes is a good way of putting it. You know, having it keeps you going. Sometimes having that storm inside you is adrenaline rush. Maybe it's you know, that fire that keeps you going. Like it could create ambition. It could make you active. It could do all kinds of things. Storms aren't necessarily a bad thing. They're kind of seen as bad, but personally, I love storms. I like having that kind of the release of the rain and the crackle of the lightning. But they tend to be used as examples of like negativity being there on their horizon. And so this makes me think about kind of an anxiety where you always feel like something's about to happen, being hypervigilant, just waiting for it to pounce. And here we are waiting for the tiger to come after you. So hypervigilance is just what comes up here. And then the tiger is both the enemy and the best friend. In a way, it's entertaining to always have something going on in your head. But at the same time, it must be exhausting to always be like worried about this tiger that might jump out at you. But it's also though described as fluffy, and you know, not often do you think of like something that's attacking you as fluffy. Fluffy tends to be like kind of a term of endearment, like you want to pet it. So again, this has the mixed feelings about the tiger. And then thinking that you're never going to be comfortable, that's unfortunate. I think that if you have anxiety, if you have kind of any kind of issue that's sort of like that, it can be a big problem that, like, maybe you weren't capable of just relaxing and feeling peaceful. Kind of makes me think of the song Born Sad by Mary Lambert, and it's about being bipolar. It's like, ever since I was a child, I was always the sad one. But anyway, I can't remember all the lyrics, but it was it's a powerful song, and I think that you should listen to it, Blue Leader 2, Blue Leader 1, pardon me. I'm promoting you to 2. our next poem is by S. Sharp, and I will take that here. Okay, did I link it? Yes. Making Mud Pies by S. Sharp. Avalanches bury me under thoughts frozen, 20 feet deep, digging, burrowing, igloos I build. Tornadoes rip board from board, thoughts shredded, shattering confidence, 1,000 pieces, like a pictureless puzzle. I built my feet. I build by feel alone. Solar flares, sear conceptions, boil away everything but the salt of meaning. I leave trails of salt, killing all the ants that surround me. Lightning strikes, shocking, heart stopped, breath stymied. Oh, Lord, thank you. Even the heart needs a break. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Faizy. I really like this one. Of course, I always like Scott's writing. Making mud pies has such an innocent feel to it, so nostalgic, really bringing it back to the innocence of childhood. And yet there's really not that kind of nostalgic feel. You know, right from the very beginning, avalanches bury me under thoughts frozen, tornadoes rip board from board, thoughts shredded, shattering confidence. And I like these lines all the way through. They're powerful. They're emotive. And the idea that we're our own worst enemy, that we become buried under these avalanches of negative thoughts, that we shatter our own confidence. I really like solar flares, sear conceptions, boil away everything but the salt of meaning. I leave trails of salt, killing all the ants that surround me. And I like that because, there's just so many uses for salt, and, you know, it can be used as a preservative. It can be, it's a natural cleansing. Like oftentimes if you have an infected tooth, or even like a sore throat, they have you gargle or rinse your mouth with salt. And then the mention of killing all the ants. And I think of the ants as almost a metaphor for those small nagging thoughts that just keep going after you and will not let up. So brilliant write by Scott, and very well done.
Well said. I agree with you, Pam, that Mud Pies has a big nostalgic feel to it. And those avalanches of thoughts, feeling overwhelmed by just too many. Because, like a little snowflake can be beautiful and gentle and like nice to feel on your skin. But if you put too many of those little beautiful thoughts, and maybe not so beautiful, maybe so many thoughts all at once, burying you can freeze you in place and weigh you down. There's this feeling of weight that happens when you're stressed out. It's like you're carrying the world. And the way that it describes as an avalanche, it's like you're frozen in place, you're underneath all of that. I think that's a really great metaphor for being trapped by your own thoughts, and the shredded and shattering images are really great too. The pictureless puzzle was one of my favorite parts, building by feel alone, not being able to see the bigger picture, and not even being able to see the details because it's just, there's so much going on that everything's been wiped away, that trying to put the pieces of your life together can be really challenging. And you know it's all supposed to fit into place, and it must, but if you can't see the image, then you can't see where you want to be going, and you can't see the little bits that you're working on. It's like, how am I supposed to put this together? It's so challenging. And then when it's talking about salt, I leave the trails of salt. So it makes me think about tears with the trails of salt that are left when you cry. Because if you do cry a lot, you actually do get a salty face. There's quite a bit of salt in tears. And then the salt of meaning, I really enjoy that. So to leave trails of salt, like you said, Pam, there are so many different uses of salt. But to drop that meaning around you and leave the trails of meaning, killing the ants around you, is really interesting. I think about how salt is often used in supernatural kind of things, like even the show Supernatural. If they want to keep a demon out, they put salt along the doors and windows so the demon can't enter. Or they do a circle of salt to trap them in a certain spot. And if you're killing all the ants around you, killing the negativity by taking this salt of meaning and leaving a trail of it, so maybe the demons are the metaphorical demons of your negative thoughts, the parts of your mind that are working against you, and you've left that trail of salt to block them out. That's just where my brain went by. Watch too much supernatural stuff, so that might not have been intended.
That makes a lot of sense. I like it, and yeah, as soon as you started mentioning supernatural, I was like, ah, yes, makes sense to me.
And I mean, like, there's a superstition of like throw salt over your shoulder, kind of thing. So I think there's a lot with salt that can go beyond the normal uses of it.
Absolutely.
Also the word stymied, not one you see very often, but I really enjoy it. Stymied. I got to add that into my like regular vocabulary.
There you go. There you go. That is a good word to put into a poem.
It is. So I believe it's your turn to read now, Pam.
All right. Worried About Him by Akiko Fox. I'll be the first to admit this. I'm worried about him. He doesn't talk to me much. He doesn't talk at all. I think he left me once, but I don't remember more. The way he held my hand, I remember it being warm. The way he touched my skin, I remember wanting to win. That's when my mind takes over, let him in. I'm trying not to think about his life. At work, I'm trying not to be his knife. He called me once on my lunch break. Our call's direction would take. I was unsure whether he would care. That's when I saw him standing over there. My eyes opened and I saw what I felt sitting in front of me as somebody else. This person didn't talk. This person used only their hands. My mind struggled to understand. I did a handstand to prove I do. That's when I realized it wasn't you. End poem.
Interesting. Interesting piece. And it says in the AN, it's not easy to know where you are sometimes. I sometimes get lost in my own mind. This one's a bit of a mystery to me. I'm curious, is the him like an actual person? Or is the him that little person in the mind? I think he left me once. Like, maybe you didn't have that little kind of the little conscience, if you could make him a conscience, that the voice of reason, the kind of the devil's advocate giving you the argument of the opposite side of what you're doing, to wonder if he left for a while, and then to worry about him because he doesn't talk to me much. So that makes me think it's the little guy inside your head that is being talked about. And that is like, I used to have these thoughts and this internal dialogue, and I don't anymore. And that could be kind of frightening, you know, not hearing those thoughts. I get like that sometimes, but it's usually because I just had a seizure or something like that where I just can't think for like a day or two, and there's just that conversation in my head just can't happen. But I think it could also happen If you're, you know, distracted, or if you're maybe depressed and you just kind of shut down, and to worry about the fact that you're not having that internal dialogue. Maybe you don't have that sense of self. If you're disassociated, if you're disconnected from yourself, from your life, then it makes it kind of scary to not have that inner person. Of course, then when it's talking about the hands and the warmth and the skin, that makes me think it was a external person. So I'm not totally sure about the way I interpreted the beginning part. Realized it wasn't you, but is it realizing you're not, that it's not a person who you thought it was, or is it realizing that you aren't who you thought you were? I'm curious. I feel like this could go several different ways. How did you see it, Pam?
Well, you know, I do agree that it could definitely go a couple different ways, and it was difficult to 100% know for sure. I am looking at their AN and how they have, it's not easy to know where you are sometimes, period. I sometimes get lost inside my own mind, period, and which makes me think that it's about a literal person because of, and that maybe it's speaking on the idea of how, like if there's somebody you care about and you haven't, they regularly call you and you haven't heard from them, or they're supposed to be home by a certain time and call you when they get home or whatever, you know, like then your mind comes up with all these different scenarios. And yet at the same time, there really is a sense of disassociation with self. You know, there is a physical in the way he held my hand, also that disassociation of self. This person didn't talk. This person used only their hands. My mind struggled to understand. And even in the beginning lines, I'll be the first to admit this. I'm worried about him. He doesn't talk to me much. He doesn't talk at all. I think he left me once, but I don't remember more. That really does feel like the whole idea of somebody who is struggling with their conscience because there's almost no longer that flow of thought. So it definitely is an intriguing rite. And whether it's about a literal person or a metaphorical, like, you know, inside the head person, either way, you can feel the sense of loss. You can feel the sense of confusion and hurt and just wanting to have answers, but not really being able to get it. And I feel like the mention of this person used only their hands is the idea of somebody who, you know, is deaf and only communicates through sign language. And I feel like that part speaks on some sort of conflict with communication, like not really being able to understand each other and wanting to. So good, wonderful, right, and very well done.
Another way I could see the only using your hands would be like, say, if they were in a relationship and they like only had physical intimacy and they didn't really talk about feelings. Like there was no I love you. There was just like the physical touch. And so they only talked with their hands. And you wonder if you're more than that. But
I like that interpretation. Very cool. Yeah, I could see that.
Luke had a totally different view, which I find really fascinating as well. He thought that the hymn was God. That like maybe the haven't heard from him for a while, felt like he left me, like feeling abandoned by God, feeling like you maybe used to have a connection through prayer or like feeling guidance, and then now you don't anymore. You don't hear that connection anymore to religion. So that was an interesting interpretation. I thought that was cool.
Well, and it's cool too, and I could definitely, you know, it's interesting because when somebody says that, like Luke made that comment and you read it, all of a sudden it was like, yeah, I could see that working too, the him being a god or a religion that feels out of reach. So great comment there by Luke.
I like when something can be interpreted in so many ways.
Me too, for sure.
This next poet who I'm going to read from is someone brand new to AP, and Maria XS. I commented on what I believe was her first poem, and that led her to entering my contest. And she told me that the little X's that she does on each line are stitches as she puts herself and her poems together. So I find that really interesting of using the X's as stitching to put it all together. So just a little bonus, if you're looking at it and you're wondering why there's those little X's, it's her way of stitching it. This is called Threading the Mind by Maria XS. My parents arguing each other feels like a mind storm. One mind must reign over the other. My parents don't understand communication. It's no wonder my mind switched location. With the comfort of a brain pillow, I'm trying to make it a nice place to be. It's my secret retreat. It's like the private fort inside my head. I retreat inside where I can always hide. It's better to have something than nothing at all. That's why I don't wish the world dead. I'd rather be inside my head. It's a place where only I can enter. Intrusive thoughts are at the center. I'm trying to make it a nice place to be, where safety will always watch over me. I can't promise it's the safest place. Darker thoughts are often misplaced. All the issues my mind has faced, at least it's slower than how my heart raced. Because I'm Maria, I can't be replaced. Just like a needle with thread, I'm threading my mind. Always be kind to yourself. Show kindness to your mental health. End poem.
Great read there, Faizy. I really like this. I like the emotional impact of this write and the raw honesty. And that's really cool to learn that about the X's that she puts in her poem. I like this all the way through. The opening is great because that is so often true that where it talks about the parents, my parents arguing each other, it feels like a mindstorm. One mind must reign over the other. My parents don't understand communication. And you know, oftentimes it's from our parents or our elders, the generation before us, that we learn communication, and we either learn what we want to do or we learn what we don't want to do, you know. And when you live in an environment, you grow up in an environment where people are always arguing, and someone has to always be right, it's not easy to learn self-calming and self-soothing and self-love techniques to know your own worth. But I like that she has obviously learned that. What darker thoughts are often misplaced, all the issues my mind has faced, at least it's slower than how my heart raced, because I'm Maria, I can't be replaced. So she knows, as we should all know, that we are a unique and special individual with these individual gifts and thoughts. And I do like where she says at the end, show kindness to your mental health. We're so much more readily eager to take care of ourselves physically than necessarily mentally. Like we don't always understand that having some quiet time or even taking a nap or doing something just for the fun of it is so important to our mental health. I thought this was a beautiful and thoughtful write by Maria, and definitely very well done.
I agree. And I love the concept of stitching yourself together and, you know, making your mind stronger, reinforcing it with that loving stitch, just like a needle with thread. I'm threading my mind, and you're threading it with kindness, holding it together with that kindness, I think is beautiful. And I like that recognition that even when you retreat into your mind, I can't promise it's the safest place. Darker thoughts are often misplaced. I really like that because it's true. Like, you know, even if you retreat into your head, sometimes that can not be the friendliest of places. You got to clean it out and make it a spot that's good to be. So recognizing that is a step towards that. And I like that those thoughts are misplaced. It's not just like that it's bad that they exist, because there are going to be negative thoughts. You know, anger is a legitimate thing. Fear is a real thing. Sadness is something that we can't just ignore completely. You know, we need to feel our feelings. But maybe we don't want it in our safe place. We have that little corner of our mind that is our safe place. And for that, we don't want it there. So I really liked the wording there. I felt like it helped out a lot. This is fantastic. I'm so happy that Maria joined AP and has found our contest. Excellent. Now I'm putting one up called, I was going to say the name, but then it was a half and half sentence there, sorry. Fluttering Kisses Freeing My Mind from Internal Darkness by Jenny the Deep. And Pam, I'm losing my mind. Is it your turn, Nate?
Oh, my gosh. I must be losing mine, too, because let me look back here and see here who I remember reading. I do think I read, yeah, it is my turn, yep, because I read Akiko's. All right. Boy, you think the two of us could keep a track of it, but nah, not this late at night.
Well, I mean, if I was commenting second, that should mean that I read that one, because if I read, you comment first. So
yes, I think that makes sense.
That's how we figure it out.
There you go. All right. And Fluttering Kisses Freeing My Mind from Eternal Darkness by Jenny the Deep. I am an overthinker torn apart. Nothing I see is clear. It's all dark. As blurry lines constantly reappear, the unknown provokes thoughts of terror. Suffocating is the corners of my mind, as obstructing shadows hinder my inner light. Trying to brighten up the gray with melatonin, I lay my conscience down on a bed of serotonin. Tightly I squeeze in a place with no room, hard to stay strong and resilient when I feel doom. Opening my tattered temporal blind, a shining luminescence pierces my brown eyes. On the precipice of melancholy malignant madness, a fluttering kiss warms my cheek, freeing me from eternal sadness. End poem.
This was great. I like that idea of you know, trying to calm down those voices that trying to brighten up the gray with melatonin. Melatonin is something a lot of people take to help them sleep. So it's like, you know, let's get this overthinking out of the way and be able to calm down. But I think my favorite line is, I lay my conscience down on a bed of serotonin. You know, having those positive feelings before you go to sleep, letting your consciousness go into that, so that way your subconscious, your dream world, can be on a more positive level. Laying your conscious down on a bed of serotonin is just a fabulous image. I really like that. I think I might you know, try to convince myself of that as I go to sleep. Just imagine that bed of serotonin. The other part that was really well done was on the precipice of melancholy, malignant madness. I mean, I have a weakness for the alliteration, melancholy, malignant madness, but also excellent vocabulary there, like on the precipice. And the way the words connect, like to think of melancholy as malignant is very accurate. It reaches out, it spreads itself. It's you know, it's not that benign thing that just sits there and like, oh, a little bit of sadness. It starts to take over everything around it. And that idea of melancholy being malignant is just really well done. But then there's that little positiveness at the end, that little kiss that makes everything okay. Beautiful work, Jenny. What do you think, Pam?
Oh, this is beautiful. Wonderful, heartfelt, right? Great title. I, too, really like the alliteration in the mention of the madness. Oh, gosh, I can't find it now. I hate when that happens. That was great. And I also like the phrase, suffocating is the corners of mind as obstructing shadows hinder my inner light. Trying to bring up the grave with melatonin, I lay my conscience down on a bed of serotonin. That was a nice image, the idea of laying your conscience down on a bed of serotonin. And I like how this speaks on the idea of struggling with the thoughts that become overwhelming, but also struggling with depression. Ah, that was it. Melancholy, malignant madness. That was great. And a fluttering kiss warms my cheek, freeing me from eternal sadness. You know, a fluttering kiss makes me think of like a kiss you would get from a child. But it could even be like a friend or a partner. And that idea of sometimes just the smallest gestures help pull you out of that funk. So just an amazing, heartfelt write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. And now I'm going to load up the last one from that contest. And this one is by Daniel DeShino, who is my co-host on Double Helix, which we are going to have at 10 p.m. So for me, it's tomorrow. And for some of you, it's today, just brightly today. That one is going to be continuation from last show's inspired by the piano work. So I'm excited for that one with Daniel. And here is his poem called The Picture That Came with the Frame. Dear Doctor, thank you for all those therapy sessions, but I'm afraid I will not be returning. I just can't take it anymore, and I know what needs to be done. No one can know true sadness without lost love. No one can know true pain without ever holding happiness. No one can know true loss without knowing home as a haven. My home is now just deadwood and stuff. I guess it always was. Home is wherever you're welcome, comfortable, at peace. There is no place for me anymore in this world I've made. I only have my mind now as my home, like most homes. I put pictures around different places that give me happiness. But the rest of the vast collection I store in a dark attic, in a locked chest, hidden under piles of unlabeled boxes. I'll look at them when I need, but most days, I forget they are there. If I was to put them all up, the amount of pictures I have taken throughout my life, they'd be everywhere. On the walls, the ceiling. There would not be a place I could look without them. I don't need a reminder to deal or to sort things out, and I definitely don't need to come to terms. I know what happened. I need to forget. There is a future, and it is freeing. The past is just chains. So, you can cancel the rest of my appointments, with all due respect. I'm going to use that time to redecorate. Warmest regards, Dan. End poem.
Now that was quite clever, I have to say. Wonderful read there. And I really like, I always enjoy Dan's writing. He's just wonderfully intelligent and philosophical. And I like that this Dear Doctor is more like the idea of writing a letter. Like, I know it can be taken literally as being written to a doctor, but I feel like it's kind of also that idea of writing a letter to yourself. You know, and learning which things to let go of and which things to store away. I really like the wisdom in home is wherever you're welcome, comfortable, at peace. There is no place for me anymore in this world I have made. I only have my mind now as my home. Like most homes, I put pictures around different places that give me happiness, but the rest of the vast collection I store in a dark attic, a locked chest hidden under piles of unlabeled boxes. The other thing this makes me think of, it makes me think of the question or the idea of when you get to the end of life, you're not going to be able to pack it up and take it all with you. So you really have to think about what's truly important. And what's truly important is not the things necessarily that are monetary or physical, but rather those moments that we appreciate. I also really like, there is a future and it is freeing. The past is just change. So you can cancel the rest of my appointments with all due respect. I'm going to use that time to redecorate. Warmest regards. And I love that he wrote this as a letter and signed it Dan. And the fact that it's realizing what's important to focus on, and part of what's important is taking time to reset your way of thinking. So just a clever write all the way through and very well done.
That was a great comment, Pam. I really like the format too, that it was written as a letter. It was unexpected, and I like twists of an unexpected format. And it's different for Dan. I've never seen him do this either. So not only is it unexpected in the contest, it's unexpected from him. That just makes it, like, extra special. I like the idea of the second stanza where it's talking about how you can't so you can't know the pain without having experienced the love, without having happiness. You need the good things for the bad to hit you so hard. Someone said, grief is just love with nowhere to go. And I feel like he's capturing that here. And that kind of recognizes that if he's in these therapy sessions because he's in pain, he's finally understood that, like, it's not necessarily a horrible thing that I have this pain, because that means that I had thing. But then it also says, my home is now just deadwood and stuff, and I guess it always was. So maybe it never was the great thing that he thought. Or maybe the house is not what's important. Maybe realizing, like, these walls of wood that is dead and all of this stuff, that's not what was important. It was maybe the people who are no longer there. The idea of the world I have made not being a home for him anymore makes it seem like sometimes we make bad choices that set up a life that is not really what we wanted. We create our own worlds with our choices, with the people who we choose to be with, with the maybe the work that we choose. Now, of course, there are circumstances that lead to those choices. Not everyone has great choices to start with, but we create our own little worlds, and sometimes you realize that world no longer fits for you, and you need to make some changes, which is why people have midlife crisis, because they're like, oh, this isn't where I wanted to spend my whole life, and they find what they need to change, for better or worse. Not putting pictures up all over the place, having to be selective about it, is true too. And it's not just about what pictures you display. I think it's about what memories you focus on. So when it's talking about, you know, your inner world, hanging up those pictures, it's like, what memories am I going to revisit all the time? And which ones am I going to just save for special occasions? So maybe if it's, say, like a loss that you've had and you don't want to have it on the wall all the time, you don't want to be thinking about it every single day, but you also want to honor that loss. You want to have something with it. So maybe you put it away and only on, like, the anniversary of that loss or some special day that recognizes it. Then you pull it out of the attic and you let yourself think about it. But most of the time, you set it aside so it's not always there staring at you. And I feel like that's the little thing with the pictures, is it's what memories that you're going to have in the back of your mind at all times. Because we have to choose. There's too much that has happened, and we can only have so much that we can handle thinking about all the time. The other thing is the title, the picture that came with the frame. Pictures that come with frames tend to be very positive things. It's happy families, beautiful landscapes, things like that. So maybe if you don't have a fantastic life, if you don't have people to connect with, if you don't have beautiful views, maybe having that picture that came with the frame lets you imagine that you do. It kind of makes me think of on the show Friends. It's sad because Phoebe thought this man was her dad, because her grandma collected all the frames that had that particular model as a person who was modeling for the frame in all different scenarios, and she thought that was her dad, because they didn't want to tell her who her real dad is, so they had all these pictures that came with the frame, and then eventually she figures that out. But sometimes it's a deception when you let yourself think that picture that came with the frame is your reality, and it's just not. So I thought that was really interesting to put as your title too, Dan. Thank you for that. Sent me down memory lanes of TV shows, but also the way that made me think about things.
So yep.
I get nostalgic for some strange things.
Oh, Friends. I still watch Friends occasionally. You know, it's just one of those easy-to-go-to shows.
It is. You know, it is, because you don't have to watch it all in order, and you're kind of, like, familiar with the characters. It's just, I don't have to think about it too much. If I just kind of want something to help me, like, veg out at the end of the day, it holds up pretty good for that.
Exactly.
Although, you know, I thought I had it pretty much memorized, and I went to a Friends trivia night, and I did not do well. So apparently I don't know it as well as I thought. They were very challenging questions, though. It was like, when Chandler wants to propose and it's interrupted by these people, what were they eating? And I'm just like, I don't know what they were eating.
You really have to pay attention to the small details for a trivia like that.
Right? Like, I know who was there. It was, like, her ex-boyfriend, Richard. But that's, like, do I know what Richard was eating? No, not whatsoever. It was not my focus. So little things like that. It was, like, the name of all of Joey's sisters. Like,
oh,
I know he has lots of sisters, but Yeah. So I didn't do too well at that. I have a contest already for next week's show, and it's based on the music of Kiki Rockwell, who is kind of a YouTube star. She makes some really interesting videos and music. I've never seen her like have like a CD or anything like that, but you can probably buy her on iTunes. She has very unusual music, I would say, but I'm kind of unusual. So I get down YouTube rabbit holes, and I got three songs that I did a quote from the song, so you don't have to listen to the whole thing. I have embedded the YouTube video so you can listen to it / watch the video. Now, they are adult videos. I mean, not crazy graphic, but there's some loving happening there, and some violence separately. And then I also link to the full lyrics so you can just read the whole thing. The prompts are the song Same Old Energy. The quote from that is, "But really, it's shadow just congregating, so act on temptation and live by sensation. That is the reason you came to creation." And that song is kind of about women who are believed to be witches. It's showing, like, back in the time where women were actually, punished to death because they were suspected as witches. But same old energy, it kind of like goes through time and how, strong, opinionated women do tend to get in trouble. Although in the video she actually is a little bit of, like, she actually has magic. But it's really symbolic about the energy of kind of discrimination against strong women. And then the second song, Burn Your Village Down, is obviously adult based on the quote that I'm going to give. "Whore, mother, sister, slut, I am the divine goddess of the smut, nurse, sinner, virgin, bitch, I am the vengeful daughter of the witch." So that one kind of talks about the contrasting views of women, where you either have to be like the perfect and pure or the whore, and it just kind of like the extremes that women are considered as. And that one, Burn Your Village Down, is kind of a vengeful story of these women are mistreated and they take it out on the town. And then prompt three, Cup Runneth Over, the quote that I have from that one is, "There's seven deadly sins, but somehow all I got was greed. Yeah, I see the warnings that I shall never heed." It's a complicated song, but she's admitting that she's too greedy, and I would say the other deadly sin she has is related to lust, because it's definitely a lustful song, but her greed for that, and it's just really interesting to me the way that she puts it. So the full lyrics are linked to there, and you can watch the video. And actually, I realized I didn't mark this as adult, so I'm going to, because the videos are adult. Oh, I did. I did actually.
They
now
sound
I see
like
it.
Awesome prompts.
They are.
I like that.
I really like it. English is not her first language, so she has a little bit of an accent, but I actually think that ends up being kind of cool with the kind of old-fashioned song that they are. Check that out. I just extended it. It was going to end today because I wasn't sure if I was going to use that contest today, but I have expanded it now, so it's open for at least another 3 days, but I'm probably going to expand it again after that, so it can be next week's show. I'm looking at the thing, and it says I have 315 contests that I've done. So that's adding up.
Quite
a
yeah, it's crazy how they add up. I mean, like, I've been on All Poetry for like 7 years, and I've got 876 contests.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It really adds up quickly.
It does. Well, especially doing these shows, right? Like, I have at least one a week, and I know that you do as well.
Yep, if not more. And, well, sometimes even I'll have more than one for the same show, because I know that you probably had this happen too, where, you know, you'll be running a contest and it's like, I'm not sure how good this is doing. I better run a second contest just in case. Yep.
I totally do that for sure. Yeah. We have 4 minutes left. Do you want to plug any of your contests that you have going on?
Oh, absolutely. Not only my own, but we got some coming up. I would like to mention that Saturday's Once Upon a Time show, Duke of STP, Dex Bailey, is running a contest where the topic is clowns, jesters, and sideshows. And you can write to any of the provided prompts, or you can write on any aspect of those topics, as long as it's related to history, the history of clowns, jesters, and sideshow freaks. For Sunday's Rhythm and Rhyme show, Selena is actually running that contest. And that is the music of Huey Lewis and the News. Of course, as I always say, make sure to keep an eye out on all the topic boards and contests put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. Oh, and one other one I would like to make sure to mention is for next week's Twisted Tuesday, Fill My Eyes has a contest up with the work of David M. Byrd, and it's really cool. He makes like these little people out of acorns and sticks, and then takes photographs of them with animals. And she's looking for story rights inspired by the artwork. And I don't know if you've seen his artwork, because he does books, Faizy, but I actually would highly recommend it to you to check out, because I think it's one you'd have a lot of fun with.
Yes, I was looking at his website, and they are so adorable. I definitely want to write a story to that. I also sent the website to one of my friends who makes little, like, nature collages and things. She's always collecting little acorns and whatnot, like, thinking she wants to make something of them. And I was like, this is what you could make.
Oh, my God, that is so awesome. So awesome.
All right, we are out of time, so thank you so much, Pam, for calling in. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for giving us this time slot, and thank you to everybody who wrote for the contest and allowed us to share your words. I love the poems that get submitted, and I really love having them to read every week. So thank you so much. Have a great night, everyone.